Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 236 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 10 of A Feast for Crows, that's Sansa 1.
And as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you, and hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and other things of note in this chapter. How are you?
I'm doing well. First off, I need to thank Jenny for filling in for me last week. She did an amazing job. I edited the episode, so I got to spend a lot of time listening. The episode was a bit of a mess, but
we were botching it all over the place. When you offered to edit it, I was like, try and keep a straight face. Are you sure, McKelly? I don't mind doing it. Please, God, let him take this from me. I knew it was a mess.
But the actual content.
Can I just tell you something funny that happened just there? Just my phone, my connection to you glitched while you were laughing. And so it kept looping on your laughing. So I kept hearing the... the same bit of your laugh kept coming in again and again in my ear. I was like, it wasn't that funny.
What is that? Oh, really is it. Easily impressed, as you say. the actual content of the episode was really good stuff, though. Yeah. So.
I don't know if you got offended, because the one thing that did give me pause was I know that I said some mean, scurrilous things about you, thinking that you would never hear them because I was going to edit them out. How bad were they? Permanently broken.
Basically, you just said that I have a tendency to ramble on and then
I don't know who that guy was saying that, McKelly. That's not fair.
You guys did have a very compact episode. I think the non-spoiler version was under 50 minutes. I think it was like, this is going to be a tight 50, and it was like 49 minutes and some seconds. So you just about nailed it. So
not bad. Not bad. We like that.
You certainly have some evidence that I may ramble on a bit. But, you know, I had a really great week this past week. You know, I had family in. My sister flew in from Los Angeles. It was great to see her. I got to spend nearly a whole week with her. And we had other family come into town, all for Molly's show. And I was trying to decide how I wanted to talk about it, because I feel like anything I say is just going to sound like a gushing dad, but they put on a really top-notch production, which I sent you a video of some of the clips
I watched a little bit of it, but I have to say, when you said that you'd illegally recorded it, I didn't realize it was going to be quite so amateurish. You were holding your phone down by your hip, you know.
Yes,
I expected more, McKelly. You're a professional podcaster.
You're not allowed to record, so I literally had to take my phone and put it to my chest so that no one could see the light
My
screen. Ah. So I was recording. I could not see where the camera was aimed, other than just like trying to look at the lens and guess if it was pointed in the right direction. So some of the clips, you know, there was a 5-night run, and I went to all 5 nights. I recorded some on 4 of the 5, and some, you know, obviously it's a live show, so some days she has better songs than other days. And her big song is World Burn, where Regina is really angry and wants to bring the whole world down. And the best night that she sang it that I recorded, unfortunately, I had the camera tilted down too far, and her whole head was cut off for most of the song. So I didn't use that one, even though it was really, really good.
Does the school do an official recording of it? Is that why you're not allowed to record it?
They don't. And I would not have bothered to record had they done. I specifically emailed the director and asked. Apparently there's a rights thing, so I guess they'd have to pay a lot more than they already did for the rights. So, but I got what I needed. As you said, quite amateurish. A lot of heads in the way.
Well, I started watching it, but I was only watching it on my phone, and I literally couldn't tell which one of the specs was Molly. So I gave up, but I will watch it on a screen. You can? These phones.
Yeah, you can zoom in on a YouTube video.
I know, I was pretending I was being even more incompetent. I get it now.
But now I have to say, I've seen the show, I saw the show 5 times, and it's a musical. It's a lot of singing. These songs in the show are now basically the soundtrack to my life. I wake up in the morning, one of the songs is in my head. I go throughout my day, just song after song rolling through my head. My sister texted me about an hour ago, because she went to 4 of the 5 shows, and she said, I can't stop hearing the songs in my head.
That doesn't sound fun.
So, they're really nice songs, but they will grow tiresome over time, I'm sure. Anyway, so that was my week. It was a really great time. It was very special for my family and I. So thank you for continuing on without me. And thank you, Jenny, for filling in.
We're happy to do it. You had a big week. So I had a nice weekend. I went to the mountains this weekend. It's the mountains of North Carolina are lovely this time of year. They're lovely all times of year, honestly. But our hosts for the weekend were spending the weekend with us because we're friends. But they had tickets to see the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round of the playoffs on Saturday night. So they came up on Friday and left on Saturday. So we had the house to ourselves until Monday, which is kind of nice.
Oh, wow.
But they offered me tickets to the game on Monday, which is game 2. And I don't know if you know what happened in game 2 of the Carolina Hurricanes against the New York Islanders. But phew, I dodged a bullet there, not watching that snooze fest. It was ridiculous game.
I did not see the game live, but I did hear about the comeback.
From 3-0 down to winning 5-3 very late. They were still 3-2 down with only 2 minutes to play. And the other thing we were just talking about before we came on was that our work is having a big party. Our work's good at throwing parties for the staff. And you reminded me of something that we don't think we've told on the pod, but I think time has passed enough now where I can mention it on the pod. I think at the time I thought I might lose my job if news of this got out. Are you sure? I feel like we need a database of stories we've told, because I remember saying this, but you think it was a sustainer call when I said it.
I think it was a sustainer call. Either way, if people have heard it before, they'll be like, oh, I remember that story. That was
it was a big party, and it's a work party. So, you know, they do put on a good show. We have various bars with local breweries bringing in their wares and lots of food. And there was lots of food and desserts. But there was a big cake, a big sheet cake, which had some kind of message on it about the company, you know, congratulations on some achievement of some sort. And I was there for the whole time. McKelly is laughing already.
I'll hold it together while you talk.
5 minutes before the end of the event, the cake was still sitting there, untouched. And so me and a friend were like, well, come on, let's go get some cake. So we went up there, and there wasn't an implement to cut it. So with like a couple of plastic forks, we chewed the corners off the cake and shoveled them onto plates. And we were 8 feet away when the catering staff came to take the cake up to the executives to cut in front of everybody. And they looked like, they were looking around like, what the, who would do that?
That is funny.
There was a lady who'd watched us do it, and she was laughing. She was like, oh no.
Oh, that's fantastic. What timing. I swear, right as you're walking
I
away,
I stuffed that thing in my mouth to hide the evidence. I was like, nope, nobody can know.
The MC is like, and now the ceremonial cutting. Drum roll, please. Wait a second. Where did those two slices go?
I got away as far as possible, but I love the idea that they were like smoothing the corners down with more like frosting, trying to hide.
Oh, that's good stuff. Well, if we told that story before, it's good enough for a retell. I've heard that story probably 6 times, and I still find it was funny.
Especially because, I mean, me, that's the kind of hijinks I'll get into. But the other person involved, I think, is a bit more straight-laced than me. And she was kind of...
Right.
I mean, I think she was all right with it because we got a piece of cake, but... The fact that she almost got into trouble with the executives was extra funny. All right, shall we get down to business? How did we leave Ms. Sansa Stark? Well, last we saw of Sansa, now going by the name of Elaine and pretending to be the daughter of Peter Littlefinger Baelish, she'd arrived in the Eyrie with her aunt Lysa and Lysa's new husband, Peter Baelish. While making a snowcastle, she was kissed by Peter. Lysa confronted Sansa and nearly pushed her out the moon door. Peter stopped Lysa, but then suddenly threw Lysa out the door, claiming he had only ever loved Kat. Baelish then called for the guards, blaming the singer Marillion for killing Lysa. Sounds like Marillion was just thrown into it at the last second, but he was complicit along the way. He was singing while Sansa was being tortured, so he deserves a little bit of this.
Right.
Anyway, McKellie, why don't we give the summary of this one?
All right, well, Sansa can't escape the music. It haunts her day and night and follows her.
Is she you?
I know. I feel her pain. She struggles to reconcile the beautiful voice with the awful human it belongs to. She recalls how Marillion would have forced himself on her if not for Lothar Brune, and he played to mask her screams when her Aunt Lysa tried to shove her out the moon door, as Simon just told us.
Sansa complains to Littlefinger that little Lord Robert Arryn cannot sleep with the constant singing, but Littlefinger thinks that Robert's lack of sleep is more due to his mother's death than the singing. Well, yeah, two elements of it. Littlefinger assures her it will be over soon. High Steward Nestor Royce is making his way up from the Gates of the Moon. Sansa cannot imagine Littlefinger will let Nestor see Marillion, but Littlefinger says he will insist on it. Baelish and Marillion have come to an agreement, due heavily to the persuasion of the jailer, Mord. Besides, if the singer sings a tune they do not like, it is his word against theirs.
Littlefinger says he'd never let Nestor hurt his daughter. Sansa thinks that she is the daughter of Ned and Kat Stark, but doesn't say it. She also thinks that if it wasn't for Littlefinger, she'd have been the one who fell 600 feet to her death, not her aunt. Regardless, she is scared of the prospects of lying to Nestor about what happened to Lysa. Littlefinger tells her that the lie will spare them the consequences, as it spared little Robert from the awful truth. They will serve Nestor lies in Arbor Gold, and he will thank them and ask for more.
Sansa considers the two sides of Peter Baelish. There's Peter, who's warm and funny and protective of her, but there is also Littlefinger, who is sly and conniving. Littlefinger did nothing to protect her from Joffrey's beatings, save her from the angry mob, or console her when she was forced to marry Tyrion. She would flee both Peter Baelish and Littlefinger, but there is nowhere to go. Her whole family is dead, captive, or besieged.
When Nestor Royce arrives with his retinue, Littlefinger sends Elaine, red Sansa, to fetch Lord Robert. Seems the boy has been crying again. He was locked in his room the previous night, and nobody answered his pleas for release. It was Sansa who had him locked in, as he's had a tendency to come into her bed at night. Sometimes a shaking fit would come on, and he'd wet the bed.
Hmm. Sansa and his maids manage to get Sweet Robin looking presentable, and she walks him into the High Hall. The little lord wants to see Marillion fly for killing his mother. The men want Sansa to tell them what she saw. She nervously begins the tale, but before she gets very far, Robert begins to cry and shake uncontrollably. Those in attendance look on helplessly until the fit subsides. With the boy now exhausted, he's carried away to be bled.
Thankfully, Sansa isn't asked to retell her tale. The men talk of how they always distrusted the singer, but Lysa ignored all of their warnings. Marillion is brought before them. He looks elegant, down to the silk bandage used to hide his eyeless sockets, a gift of persuasion from Mord. Marillion sings the tune he and Littlefinger agreed upon. He killed Liza out of jealousy for her love of Peter. The singer is then sent back to his cell, and the men determine that he must die.
The guests retire to their rooms. Only Nestor joins Littlefinger in his sola. When it's settled, Nestor says his cousin Jon Royce will want to question Merillion himself, and he'll come in force. Baelish knows Bronze Jon distrusts him. Nestor adds that Jon plans to remove Littlefinger as Lord Protector. Peter says there's nothing he can do to stop that. Jon will do as he will. It's then that Littlefinger pulls a roll of parchment from a drawer and hands it to Nestor.
Sansa is shocked when tears form in the man's eyes as he reads. Royce is surprised by the contents, but Littlefinger reassures him that they, the Lordship of the Gates of the Moon, represent Liza's true feelings toward Nestor. Her rock is how she thought of him. While the letter bears the Aaron seal, the signature is actually Littlefinger's. He explains Liza was murdered before she could sign it, and as Lord Protector, Littlefinger took on the duty. Royce is appeased as to the provenance, but still worries that the other lords might see the gift as unseemly. The gates have always been an Aaron castle. Littlefinger points out the slender thread of the Aaron line and stresses that the gift is forever, so Nestor's sons will be far more elevated than he could have ever dreamed.
Royce is sold and takes his leave. As Sansa goes to leave, Littlefinger explains what he's doing, although Sansa has figured most of it out. The subtlety was not to make the gift a bribe. You cannot ask a Royce his price, he has none. But if you gift him his heart's desires, he'll be your man. The gift is dependent on Littlefinger being Lord Protector, so Royce has no choice but to defend Baelish's claim. He's impressed by her understanding, as if she was his own daughter. She stresses that she isn't, but he warns her never to deny it, even in private. They must maintain the ruse. She worries about those who do know, Oswald Kettleblack, Lothar Brune, but Littlefinger is sure of them, and he has each spy on the other.
She retires to bed, and in the night is joined by little Lord Robert. He can stay, but he mustn't squirm. He agrees and snuggles up to her. He asks if she is his mother now, and she, rolling with the lies that seem to be flowing freely these days, says that she supposes that she is. Okay.
Yep. All right, so the big question to me about this is, what has Littlefinger arranged with Merillion? Do you know that? Because to me, you've already taken his eyes out. What is left? I mean, presumably his life is the one thing that's left.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Heron Hall affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Yeah, I think it's the promise of no more torture, really.
Oh.
I mean, he doesn't really go into it, but I think he's lost his eyes. The rumor is he's lost his several fingers.
Right.
And I think Littlefinger prevailed on him that I'm just going to keep torturing you. And it's not going to matter, because if you go up there and say that it was me that did it, I'm going to deny it. And Sansa's going to back me. And who are they going to believe, us or you?
Right. But if you're being tortured like that, what have you got to lose? I mean,
I think peace, die peacefully. They probably have said, you're going to die regardless. You can die being tortured, or we'll leave you.
But it is a final throw of the dice to deny it, to go up there to the lords and say, look, I'm just a lowly singer. She was my sugar mama. Everything I had, I owed to that woman. Why would I kill her? But that guy, that
he's now Lord
chiseling
Protector.
Outsider who's now in charge of the Vale, he had a lot to gain from her death, and that kid with him, she's doing exactly what she's told.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess you could do that, but you have to imagine, you remember how messed up Tyrion was when he was in a sky cell. You know, it's got no fourth wall, so it's exposed to the elements.
Yeah, I would want to be out of that sky. I would want the torture to stop. I would want to be out of that sky cell, and I would want to live. And I might risk more torture to get out of that sky cell and live.
Yeah, you might. You might, although if you were in that condition, you might think, all right, I'll just accept peaceful death over tortured death. Yeah. But, and the last time we saw Merillion, which was at the end of A Storm of Swords, when this whole scene went down, he had two eyes. So it's never specifically said, but it certainly feels like the loss of the eyes are a part of the persuasion that Mord used.
But the thing is, again, if I was hit, well, you're right. You must have hit the nail on the head here, but I was confused. I was like, I can't imagine them torturing him into compliance. It seems like that wouldn't work. Because the one thing is, he can't answer the questions to the Lords of the Vale whilst under torture. They're going to want to see him answer off his own back, you know.
Yes, and I think that's why Merillion was so carefully presented to the guests. He was bathed, finely dressed. He had a fine silk cloth over his to hide his eye sockets. His gloves, he was wearing gloves instead of, his bare hands. And Sansa thought it looked like the fingers that were supposedly, it was both his pinkies and one of his ring fingers. They looked rather stiff, like maybe someone stuck a stick up in the holes, the fingers of those. So I think you're exactly right. He was presented that way, so it looked like he's being treated with respect despite the terrible deed that he did. Because if he looked beaten and missing fingers and bloody eye sockets, they might not believe that his confession is legitimate.
Anyway, I mean, This is basically the first round of Littlefinger's maneuvering to secure his position in the wake of Lysa's death. It is a good move, elevating the lesser Royce house to create division between the strongest house, the strongest other house in the Vale.
Because, right, absolutely.
And especially by making it dependent on Baelish's own position. If he'd faked Lysa's signature, Royce wouldn't have had much to fight for. Nestor Royce could have sided with his cousin to depose Littlefinger. He's got what he wants. He doesn't need Littlefinger, but because it's signed by Littlefinger, he's got that extra hold over him.
All true. And we hear about Littlefinger and Sansa's lies profiting Nestor before we hear why they're going to profit him. I think it's like he'll believe us over Merillion because our lies profit him.
Right. Yep.
And, we had heard in the Cersei chapter that the Vale Lords are not happy about Littlefinger as Lord Protector of the Vale. And, it seems like he would, if you think about it, because we know him from King's Landing and from the River Run, he feels like an outsider, but technically he's from the Fingers, which is the northeast part of the Vale. So it's just that he's not from a great house, as they would surely prefer for the Lord Protector.
But he is like a stepfather who's just arrived, And not a beloved stepfather, but a very recently arrived stepfather who's now taken control, and that can't sit well. And you're right, it doesn't help that he is from the Vale, because he is actually a lesser lord of the Vale, and so he's even more jumped up. If he was a Lannister, at least he would be from a noble house and therefore sort of worthy of their respect kind of thing, but he's a jumped up local.
Yeah, the Vale Lords are really not getting their way lately. Jaime was designated Warden of the East by King Robert. Then Peter Baelish, who came from the Fingers, like one of the smallest of the Fingers, and was raised outside of the Vale, is now the Lord Protector of the Vale. So, they could certainly feel that they are really not happy with the way their leadership has gone lately.
And sorry to focus on the back end of the chapter first, but Sansa grasping the machinations quite quickly it really impresses Baelish. And it's feeding into Baelish's own sort of like delusion here, because he's treating her like his daughter and he's seeing signs of himself in her. Of course, is like that's psychologically a bit weird right there, because you're buying into your own lie, is it?
Right. One thing about Mord, before we move on from Mord and Marillion and the torture and all that, Sansa notices that Mord has golden teeth. It's just a quick thought she has before Mord takes Marillion away. And I'm pretty sure the reason that is because he is the same jailer who attended to Tyrion. And if you might recall, he treated Tyrion terribly.
Yes.
But Tyrion bribed him with gold
yes.
if he delivered Tyrion's message that he wanted to confess to the crime. And then after Bronn defeated Vardis Egan in the trial by combat, he paid Mord the gold that he promised him. So Mord must have gone out and bought gold teeth with that.
Or melted down the coins for his teeth.
Oh, could have been that too, yes. Gold teeth, that would be pretty soft, wouldn't it? Like,
It's not the strongest metal, but I mean, I think it can. Right. Well, that's interesting, actually, because your teeth are very strong.
Yes.
Just feel like you would dent them over time, but.
Yeah.
I don't have a grill myself, so I don't know.
Yeah, I would think usually a grill goes over real teeth. I'm not sure if he had real teeth.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You know? These are false gold teeth, yeah.
Yes, he'd have to stick to soup and mashed potatoes.
Yeah. But he looks good. He looks the part.
That's right.
Sansa's trials and tribulations are working perfectly, I think, for Littlefinger, because she owes him her life several times over. And that sense of gratitude that she naturally feels is conflicting with her concerns and revulsion at many of the things that he's doing, you know, not least murdering her aunt and kissing her. But she's so confused by it all, you know, and she is so dependent on him that she can't really think of not that she's trying to think of a way out of it, but that it's fusing them together. They are bonded in a way that is troubling to her because she knows that he's a bit weird and a creep.
Yeah, the way I thought about it when I read through the chapter this week was that she's only looking at the end result of Littlefinger saving her, not the root cause.
Well, true. And,
you know, surely she's grateful for him saving her life. But I think, like you're saying, the trauma of it all has not really, either it hasn't dawned on her or she's repressing it, considering the danger that his kiss put her in, that led her to be nearly pushed out
the
door.
And then couple with that, the list of things that you mentioned in the summary, the times that he hasn't defended her, from the Joffrey beatings, from the angry mob, from, what was the third one? Oh, from having to marry Tyrion. He did nothing. He didn't raise a one of his little fingers to do that, to save her from those things. So as a protector, he's selective. And like you say, he's causing a lot of the problems that he's protecting her from.
Yes. At the beginning of the chapter, she's kind of thinking of there's two Peters. There's Peter Baelish and there's Littlefinger. And she's beginning to see that, you know, he's kind of a complicated person. And so I did some digging and he was in King's Landing when she was being beaten by Joffrey. When Tyrion saved her in the yard from the beating, that was chapter 32 of A Clash of Kings. Littlefinger didn't leave for negotiations with the Tyrells in Bitterbridge until chapter 36, and then he returned after the Battle of the Blackwater. So he was there for those beatings. He did not help her in that situation. The riot happened in chapter 41, which was while Littlefinger was in Bitterbridge. So he wouldn't have been able to help her there.
Okay.
And he was said to have left King's Landing to woo Lyza Arryn in chapter 19 of A Storm of Swords. Of course, we know he didn't actually leave, but he did leave the Red Keep to make it look like he'd left. And Sansa and Tyrion married in chapter 28 of A Storm of Swords. So he was not in the Red Keep when Sansa married Tyrion.
Yeah.
But I think the overall point that she's trying to make is he did nothing to help me while I was stuck as a captive in the Red Keep until he did get her out.
Right, exactly, yeah. So that's the thing. He's a mixed bag of, like, failure to do anything to protect her, increasing the danger on her, and then rescuing her at the 11th hour. And I think the other thing that's happening in this chapter we see is that he's psychologically, he's turning the dials on her, because when she denies being his child, he says, not unreasonably, he says, don't deny it. Don't even deny it in private. Yeah. Because, it, you know, eventually a servant might hear, and you don't need any more blood on those pretty hands.
I had that. I thought of that same line. Yes.
Yeah. And she's entirely trapped by this logic, because she thinks about it, and she thinks about the blood that he has spilled for her. Dontus and Lysa being the two most recent, two most obvious things, the two murders that she witnessed. And she doesn't want that. She definitely doesn't want that. And so, you know, not only is he getting what he wants from her because of sort of rational argument, but also because he's psychologically tearing her down and trying to making her his puppet a little bit.
Right. He says things in the chapter like, well, first of all, he says things like, do you ever think I'd let him hurt my daughter, referring to Nestor Royce, and Sansa thinks, but I'm not your daughter, early on. We see as the chapter goes along, her getting more and more comfortable with the idea of pretending to be his daughter. And, you know, we have talked about Littlefinger's feelings for Sansa, whether they're protective or romantic. Now, the kiss certainly caused us to lean one way, but then as we've seen things unfold, I wonder if possibly it could have been orchestrated to get
right,
Lysa just, to do exactly what she did.
A calculated decision, know. That meant nothing.
Yes, right. And just get Lysa to do something reckless so that he could get her out of the way.
A calculated decision that had nothing to do with his feelings for Sansa, but had the sort of like extra benefit to Littlefinger of further confusing and troubling Sansa.
Right, yes. And it seems like he's enjoying considering her his daughter. As you were saying earlier, it's almost like he's starting to buy into his own tale. And I think some of that might have to do with cutting Ned out of the picture, you know? Like, in his mind, possibly thinking of Sansa as his and Kat's daughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, remember, he loved Kat, and then Kat was betrothed to Brandon Stark, and Littlefinger, you know, tried to duel Brandon Stark and just got humiliated and had Kat stolen from him regardless. So cutting the Starks out of the picture has to be somewhat enjoyable to him on multiple levels.
Right, for sure. I do agree with you that it's sort of like astute of Sansa to take apart Baelish's the two sides of his character. But I also think that it's an oversimplification, or maybe actually even an overcomplication, because I actually don't think there are two sides to his character. Every bit of him is a scheming manipulator. He just has he has a front that he puts up sometimes, which is who she calls Peter Baelish, and then he has the more directly scheming Littlefinger.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes. Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Yeah, he says at one point, I told Ned Stark never to trust anyone, and he didn't listen. Ironically, the person that that Ned Stark trusted that he shouldn't have was Littlefinger. So,
let me tell you, Ned, I speak with authority. Trust no one.
Yes. And he says this to his daughter, who he's now pretending to be the father of. It's just all kinds of betrayals of Ned Stark. You know, but speaking of Littlefinger and Peter Baelish, Sansa thinks she would escape both Littlefinger and Peter Baelish, but she has nowhere to go. Everyone in her family is dead, captive, or besieged, but she's missing one. And unlike Arya, she never considers that she has a brother at the Night's Watch. She thinks of Tyrion. She thinks of Brendan Blackfish Tully, Edmure Tully, but not the brother that she was raised alongside in Winterfell, who's very much alive and in, you know, Winterfell. I mean, in at Castle Black.
You'd love to tell Brienne that before she marches off to the wall.
Yes. And she's not thinking of Jon. He's not crossed her mind. So Sansa kind of just very briefly remembers the as Peter called them, the ravings that Lysa had said before she was pushed out of the Moondor. And just a reminder, what she's referring to there was that was when Lysa confessed all the things that she had done that Peter had set her up to do, like putting tears of lace in Jon Arryn's wine at Littlefinger's behest, and then write a letter to Kat blaming the Lannisters for Jon Arryn's murder. And, you know, as I was thinking about it during one of my read-throughs of this chapter this week, I was thinking, you know, Littlefinger discounts it. He says they're raving. She was mad, clearly. And I could, from Sansa's perspective, you could certainly see how, you know, he could say that because she tried to push her out of Moondor for making a snow castle and getting a simple kiss.
Yeah.
But Sansa has heard them, and that makes her a little bit dangerous to Littlefinger because nobody else knows. So I think, obviously, he doesn't seem to have any plans of harming Sansa at this point. Keeping her close, keep her loyal, trusting you so that she accepts the ravings explanation.
Yeah.
But it does put her a little bit in danger of him needing to silence her.
You raise a very good point. You see, it sort of passed me by because we already knew it. And so it doesn't really bother me to hear it again. But you've got to remember, you're absolutely right. There are characters who are hearing it for the first time. And Sansa heard it for the first time. And she's clearly remembering it right now. And a child of the 21st century in our world would not remember this because they'd play on their iPhone and forget about it. But this poor kid is stuck in the Eyrie.
Right.
Greatest entertainment is watching little Robin, sweet Robin, have fits and building snow castles. It's like, what else have you got to do but brood on the things you've heard?
Right. Yes, that's true. Yeah, you're right. It's not like she could go onto Instagram and, you know, scroll and forget about all the things. But
Peter Baelish is perhaps lucky she can't, because she might post something about
that's
that.
That's true. Post her location, and Brienne will be like, I knew it!
It is all pretty bleak for Sansa, but she is developing a set of life skills that she may very well need. I mean, not just, you know, theorizing where her story might go from here. You know, sort of like the manipulativeness and the ruthlessness that she's learning from Peter Baelish are, you know, they are traits that Arya gravitates towards, but Sansa, they don't come naturally to Sansa. And so I think she will learn from some of this. Alongside the sort of traditional roles that she might have expected to move into, learning to be a mother to Sweet Robin, which she is, by her own admission, doing, she's also developing that quite deep cunning and ability to lie, calculating mind for the plots and deceptions, and both their creation and their detection, which is very, you know, both sides of that are useful if you're going to play the Game of Thrones, that's for sure.
Sure. Right. She's getting a lot of... She's taking on a lot here. She's taking over as Sweet Robin's de facto mother, and she is pretty sweet with him, but, you know, she's got enough stressors of her own at this age. Adding newly made mother to the list could be one of those things that's like nearly the straw breaking the camel's back type situation.
Especially,
you know?
To such a needy child as well.
Yes, right, yeah. But the, you know, the manipulation and cunningness and lying, they're certainly not skills she would have picked up in Winterfell from Ned.
No.
And it's sad that she's learning them, but it seems like she's being forced to play the Game of Thrones. Peter keeps telling her about playing the Game of Thrones. So if she's going to be forced into playing the game, those type of skills might become useful at some point along the way.
Yep.
And, you know, speaking of Robert Arryn, he's so small and sickly. He's 8, but Sansa says she's seen bigger 5-year-olds. And, you know, we know that Lysa was in love with Littlefinger since their days at River Run. And we know that she made Jon Arryn hire Littlefinger for various jobs throughout the Vale, and we know that they've been conspiring together to off John Arryn and then Merry. So because of his small stature, maybe not necessarily his sickliness, but because of his small stature, it's natural to wonder, could Robert Arryn actually be Littlefinger's son?
Huh. There's a hand grenade to throw into the room. Just as we get to the end of discussion, you decide to throw this one in. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it, but I mean, it's also plausible, and this is... This could offend people, so please don't be offended. This is just something that I have a gut feeling about that maybe is not true at all, and I welcome people telling me that there is research to say the opposite. But sometimes it feels like much older fathers tend to have children who are, you know, maybe have some medical problems and things, you know, just... Okay. I don't know if that's true at all, but I have a feeling that that's true. So I always believed little Robert as being John Arryn's son for those reasons. Yeah. But the stature thing, that does fit with Peter Baelish.
Here's why I think it's probably not true. And I think, you know, I certainly understand your point as well, but I also think that in the last sense of chapter, when Lysa was confessing all the things that she did for Littlefinger, poison John Arryn, you know, write the letter. She never mentions the tryst where they produced Robert Arryn. You'd think that would be something that might have come up at that point, you know.
But even in her madness, she might have bitten her tongue on that one, because think about what it would mean if that got out.
Yes. Well, that's true. Same thing that would mean to Tommen
exactly.
if it got out about his father.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, honestly, kind of as you were saying, John's seed just wasn't very strong, ironically.
I almost made the same joke.
If you look at the history of John Arryn, he had 3 stillborn children before Robert. So I think he's, you know, he's just never meant to reproduce robust, strong children.
I also wonder if the Tansy tea might have made Lysa's womb a dangerous place for a growing baby.
I don't know if it's ever mentioned about what kind of side effects Tansy tea might have on future pregnancies. That's a possibility, though.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And now a brief interlude for spoilers. The higher levels of our Buy Me a Coffee sustainers get to hear the spoilers section. Consider joining and you'll get to hear the good stuff. To background, what do you got for us? Can I just say, especially for our non-English speaking listeners, what you got for us is terrible English. Don't use it. I mean, please. What you should say is, to background, what do you have for us today, McKelly?
Well, I will say there was not a great deal of background that I wanted to bring up, because some of the things that seem like background in this chapter will come up again in later chapters, I wanted to wait until then. So I chose Sir Marwyn Belmore to speak of. He was one of the knights who accompanied Nestor Royce to the Eyrie. Well, it's in the description of Sir Marwyn Belmore in this chapter, it was mentioned that he was the previous captain of the guard at the Eyrie until Peter got there and replaced him with Sir Lothar Brune. Now, Marwyn succeeded Vardis Egan, who died fighting Tyrion. Not fighting Tyrion. He died fighting Tyrion's trial by combat against Bronn. Marwyn stepped in after Sir Vardis died. Marwyn is now captain of the guard for Nestor at the Gates of the Moon. So here's just a little info on House Belmore. The house is led by Lord Benadar Belmore. Their seat is Strongsong here in the Vale. Their sigil is 6 silver bells on a purple field. A row of 3 bells at the top, a row of 2 bells in the middle, and a row, and then not a row, but 1 lone bell at the bottom. The Belmores are actually a very old house, dating all the way back to the First Men. The Belmores actually fought in the famed Battle of the 7 Stars during the Andal invasion of the Vale.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's also, so that's interesting. I'd forgotten that this, I didn't even know that this was the case, but he has a reason to not like Littlefinger, having lost his position because of Littlefinger, ousting him in favor of Littlefinger loyalist in the person of Lothar Brune. And so the ride back down from the Eyrie might be interesting when Nesta's saying, you know what, that little finger guy, he's convinced me. And Belmo would be like, well, he hasn't convinced me. I'm still not what I once was.
Right. I'm at the bottom of the mountain instead of the
yes,
top.
Yes, exactly. So comparison with the television show, there's no Marillion. I mean, he existed very briefly, I think, back in the inn. I think there was a singer, but his character was basically dropped. So Lysa's death is played off as a suicidal accident, that she was suicidal, but she fell. Some of this is kind of more in the next Sansa chapter, but the story is so different that it just as easily fits here. The Vale Lords are simplified down to just a trio. Bronze Yon Royce, Nesta is completely skipped, Vance Corbray, and Anya Wainwood. They are very skeptical of Littlefinger's bona fides, but Sansa's testimony wins them over. They don't have Marillion to vouch, so Sansa is the one they question. And Sansa does a great job of keeping the lie up. It's one of Sansa's best scenes in the whole show, I think. She describes the death of her aunt, including some heart-stopping moments for Littlefinger, where she could go either way, you know. And
right.
Aidan Gillen plays Littlefinger, and I didn't always like him as Littlefinger, but he's really good here, just sort of like trying not to react as his life hangs by a thread, you know. When she says she saw him kiss me, for instance, he's like, ooh. But then she says it was just a peck on the cheek. He's my uncle. Jeez, get your minds out of the gutter. Oh, right. She didn't say it like that, but she said that's basically what she said.
Right.
Lysa attacked Sansa. Littlefinger intervened. He swore his love. This is the story that Sansa's telling. Lysa doubted that love, and she fell through while being hysterical, sort of thing. Sansa then breaks down in tears, and as Lady Wainwood consoles her, she slowly opens her eyes and looks at Littlefinger, who is outwardly calm, but presumably is in search of a defibrillator for what he's just gone through. You know, it's a really good
chest compression.
Exactly. It's a really good scene.
Yeah, it sounds it. You've described it so well, I can picture it in my mind.
Yeah. It's the best moment is when Sansa opens her eyes, because she doesn't just like flick her eyes open and look at him and go, you owe me big time. She opens her eyes very slowly and sort of, yeah. Right. It's a pedantry. I've never been tortured to within an inch of my life, and I hope not to be. But I
hope the same for both of us.
Yes. I have a very great sense of self-preservation, though, and I think I would have gone back on the deal with Peter Baelish to try and get out of those sky cells and never go back to Mord. Even if Baelish had promised that Mord would no longer hurt me, I would.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that risk. I guess it depends on how broken down he is.
Yeah.
You know, if they've broken him down to the point where he doesn't even care to live anymore, he just wants...
I will say that is a character decision, so it does not count as pedantry, but it did strike
me. True.
News and notes.
Well, we just decided before we started recording that our next sustainer call will be Tuesday, May 7th. So I hope I remember to send the invite this time.
details.
That's right. So we're looking forward to that. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We have a good time. Yeah. We have a lot to talk about.
If you're thinking about joining, join soon so that you can get on that, because it is fun. We'd love to meet our listeners. And, yeah.
That's right.
We have a good time. All right. And we've got a review from Sir Walter on Apple Podcasts. And I will say that this is the first negative review we've ever read out. So here goes. These guys need to quit. So, okay. Thanks, Walter. That's good.
All right. Well, interesting start.
Let's hear where this goes. I started listening back in November, and now that I have caught up and I'm sadly limited to one episode a week, even though I don't get that this week since they're on vacation, I have decided they need to quit their day jobs and start doing the podcast full time. I've read the books through two or three times, and I listened to the audiobooks twice before. Now I'm listening to the audiobooks and following along with the podcast after each chapter. The depth and discussion and background do a tremendous job in explaining a very fast and complex story. I can't recommend it enough. I just wish the episodes came out more often. This, like, crying emoji at the end. Thank you, Sir Walter. You had me worried for a second. I was like Peter Baelish as Sansa spoke there.
Yeah, it was one of those teasers. It started out like it was going to be negative and turned into a positive. So good work, Sir Walter.
All we need is like 20, 30,000 more of you to join the sustainable tier and we can quit our day jobs.
Yes, we're going to need a few more sustainers before we can do this full time. But hey, if you guys are out there listening and you want to head us toward that goal, come join us in the sustainership.
Yeah, believe me, if we could, we would.
All right. This is way more fun.
Way more fun. All right, let's conclude this one. So Littlefinger begins his moves to secure his future, and Sansa is learning the ropes.
Yeah, so, I mean, it certainly seems like the Vale powers that be want Littlefinger out. But as we're seeing in this chapter, he's showing that he's got some moves and some plans. And, you know, one lesser lord seemingly secured, but some pretty heavy hitters are en route. So, you know, he's got more work to do.
The one thing I'll say is I think he can carry on doing the same kind of thing. Peel them off one by one and offer each one of them a reason to not be united as a whole. And once they're not united, once you've got enough of them defected to your side, then
yeah,
it almost has to be unanimous to dethrone him.
And you know what that makes me think of? It's one of the opening descriptions in the chapter after Sansa talks about how she can't escape the music. She goes to Peter and says, "Can't you make him stop?" And he's writing a letter and she thinks to us, he's been writing like 100 letters since Lyza fell. And I wonder if some of those letters are exactly what you are describing there.
Yeah.
But, you know, another thought I had about all this is that Cersei in her chapter, she thought she might order Littlefinger back to King's Landing to take up Master of Coin again when Giles Rosby dies.
Right.
If that were to happen, Would he give all this up and do as he's told if he's making headway and progressing toward securing the Vale? Or would he rebel against the Crown's orders and say, "Oh, I didn't get the... must have gotten lost in the..."
Big mountains. Ravens don't like to climb up that high. Yeah. That's an interesting... That will be an interesting moment when that comes, when that raven comes.
Right. Lord Rosby has to die first, but, you know, if and when he does, she might make good on that thought.
I wonder, I mean, because he's in poor health, so it could happen fairly soon. I wonder if that might actually help Littlefinger to shore up support. You know, if he says, "You know what, I'm staying here. This is..." Although Bronz Yon might be like, no, you go. you go right on ahead. We don't need you here.
But yeah, you know, you mentioned Sansa learning the ropes, and she is. It's a little bit unfortunate that such a young girl is learning to be manipulative and scheming, but, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it's good that she's learning to think through situations and not just taking them at face value, you know, Sansa would have done. So she's come so far from the Sansa who, you know, first went to King's Landing that, you know, it's all pretty much unrecognizable.
Plenty more to come, I feel.
Uh-huh.
Marilyn is playing ball for the reasons that you've laid out. And that is that's a huge thing for Littlefinger. Because even if one time he breaks and says, "No, I didn't do this, it was Littlefinger," that could really bring Littlefinger down. Because the Vale Lords want to hear that. They want that news. And they'll be inclined to believe it. So,
yeah, even if it just sees the smallest bit of doubt
in
one of their minds.
And we kind of glossed over it, but Robert Arryn is a pretty damaged kid. I mean, he's like climbing into bed with Sansa and he's basically trying to breastfeed while he's in bed with her and wetting the bed, which is like, you know, double whammy of inappropriate from that child.
Yeah. And you know, he has this shaking sickness. And I tried to look up, do some research to see if it might be epilepsy. But quite honestly, I don't have the medical brain enough to be able to determine such things. So I
assumed it was epilepsy, but I didn't look into it. I just assumed.
Yeah. Whatever it is, it's really, it's really sad to see him go through these shaking fits and such.
But poor Sansa, she's beset on all sides by lecherous males of all ages, basically. From the 5-8-year-olds to the uncle figures, you know. They're all after her.
You know, she's had... We've talked about how rough of a go Arya has had and the terrible things Arya has seen and had to do. And yet, Sansa might have not literally had to kill people like Arya has, but she's had a rough road as well.
I mean, not to diminish what she's been through, but she's been lucky. I mean, Tyrion could have been a lot worse as a husband.
Oh yes,
for example,
yes, you're right about that.
You know, and Lothar Brune might not have been there to protect her, and the Hound might have not been there to protect her. And
yes,
you know,
you're right about all that.
She's flirted with real horrors, and she's somehow got away from a lot of them. Joffrey's beatings being a distinct counterexample.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, next up is a first for someone, and one of those rare chapters which is named for a specific character, but not the character's name. If you see what I'm saying, I mean it's.
Yeah, I do.
Yes.
I know exactly what you're saying because I know what the chapter is.
For the listeners who aren't paying attention, you'll see next time. All right.
That's right.
There's 4 ways that you can help us. You could leave us a positive review, as Sir Walter did. You can buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You can buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal, which is also where you can join us at any of the various sustainer levels. There's a tier to match your budget and interests, and if you go to one of the higher tiers, you get invited to the sustainer chats and also to the spoiler section. Or you can just make a donation directly to our cause at ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
And if you're looking for more ways to interact with us and keeping up on the latest Ghosts of Harrenhal news and developments, well, you can always go check us out on our social medias. You can follow us on Twitter at Ghosts Harrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.